Welcome, friends, regular listeners, and new listeners to the program. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and we are recording from the west coast of Sweden. And you can hear us every Thursday and Sunday through our website, redicecreations.com. Check out our news section, our forum, and for you guys who want to have full access to Red Ice Creations Radio, don't miss out on our subscriber section. All information on how to sign up is available on redicecreations.com. And today we have a new voice with us on the program, AJ Bruno, who is behind the online bookstore One Heart Books. He's with us, and our main theme of today's program is mind control, EMF weaponry, and we're going to talk about a few good books on this subject. We're also going to talk about AJ's experience with EMF technology or weaponry. So we have a full schedule here ahead of us. I also want to mention his website, of course, or bookstore. Simply punch in oneheartbooks.com. Take a look around. He's got a whole section on the mind control with some excellent books available there. But there's a whole lot more for you to discover there on many different topics and subjects worth looking into. So take a look. Again, it's oneheartbooks.com. So let's say welcome to AJ Bruno and get this program on the road. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Hunter, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's great to have you with us again. Thank you for coming on. This is always nice to, when we have a new guest with us on the show, to kind of talk about a little bit about the background of on you, of course, but also the main thing here, your bookstore, of course, One Heart Books. Would be interesting to hear a little bit about that and when you started it, and I guess even why, and tell us a little bit about the name also, if you will.
Yeah, the bookstore started working on it at the end of 2005, and got it live around December of that year. It's been up and running since then.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it One Heart Books because, you know, there's the concept of the one heart. You know, all life is intrinsically one.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything in the natural world already, you know, operates in a balance. And what we have with this new world order is that they're coming in and trying to force this pseudo-oneness, you know, which is these separate parts that work as this machine. But we have this, the one-heart vibration of life, which is manifesting from the center of what I will call creation, which is stillness. And that's manifesting as a sound.
Mm.
And it manifests out of the silence of the center and returns to that silence, all of life. So you have birth and then death. But life itself is eternal. And then you have all life, you know, and all matter is a manifesting vibration of that sound. And that, you know, that all functions to the heartbeat of creation.
Mm. There's a nice, you have a little bit of, I guess it's more, a Rastafari theme, but also a concept of the Noah's Ark is kind of persistent through your website. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was influenced a lot by the Rastafarians. I don't particularly adhere to a lot of their dogma, but they have a lot of good ideas, yeah. A Noah's Ark is pretty much a remembrance of the destruction of Atlantis and the great flood and evidence, archaeological evidence of that occurring.
Mm.
Now, granted, Noah's Ark is basically a myth, but it's a symbol, you know, for me of that actually happening.
Mm.
In the past, and in these times, we're in that same situation again.
Because
I feel that, you know, what we have today with all these elite bloodlines that have set themselves up in these positions of power, you know, they were trying to do this, you know, 10,000, 12,000 years ago, whenever Atlantis fell.
Mm.
And that's what I feel Atlantis was, is that that's the old New World Order.
Hmm.
And here they are doing over again.
Mm.
they're trying to do it a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. And you have, you have a subquote on the first page on your bookstore that says healing the planet of the new world order, disease, knowledge is medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, most of the problems that we see happen in these times are traceable back to these elite bloodlines, and they either create these problems. Or like vultures, they feed on existing problems that are naturally occurring while obscuring any type of real solutions.
Mm.
And a lot of that time, this control comes about through the trauma that they create, and then misdirecting that trauma towards a specific purpose. And, I mean, there's a lot to be spoken of in regards to that, but 9/11 is a perfect example of it.
Of course.
They traumatize American society and the rest of the world with that event of being an inside job. And they're, instead of people thinking for themselves, they fall under that trauma, and then they're looking for someone to come and save them. So, of course, the state's going to tell them everything that they need to hear, supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they can misdirect them in whatever direction that they want. Here we have the war in Afghanistan and this whole Middle East agenda that's unfolding for these final stages of this whole agenda be put together to create the global government.
Yeah. Do you think that, as you have stated on your website, that knowledge is the kind of remedy against this?
Yeah, for sure. You know, knowledge is definitely a medicine. You know, and there's a statement from Francis Bacon that knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
But if knowledge is power, I'd ask the question over whom and what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
You know, what's your intention with that knowledge? If you're going to use knowledge for self-empowerment, then that's fine. Then in that regard, we can say knowledge is power. But at the same time, we have to consider that a lot of people, especially these elites, will see that self-empowerment for them is actually having power over others. But it's not really the true sense of having the true power. You know, because to really have true power is not to really go out and step on anybody.
Mm.
And let anybody step on you. You know, there's that whole idea that I can gain something or someone can gain something from taking or manipulating somebody else.
Mm, yeah.
And then that other individual will fall under that, misdirection, misunderstanding that, what's the word? It slips my mind sometimes, words.
Yeah.
To get the idea of what I'm talking about, but that individual
definitely
is underneath that spell.
Yeah, yeah.
But what spell is the one who's doing the misdirecting under?
Hmm.
Who's the greater slave here?
Yeah. So.
So.
Yeah.
With that, I feel with a proper understanding of knowledge and the right kind of knowledge, you know, we can begin to solve all these problems that we're having here occurring on this planet. That's, you know, a lot of it has come about through the Hegelian dialectic.
Yeah.
Over the centuries and over time. And really, you know, what we have here is a collective problem that resides at the individual level.
Mm-hmm.
So, to really solve these problems, there needs to be enough individuals in my eyes to take that personal responsibility to heal their minds of all the misinformation and come to an understanding of what is at the roots of all this turmoil.
Yeah.
Because if we don't really get to the roots of what's going on here, then we can really never have any real solutions.
That's right.
You know, they'll always, these elites and, people like George Bush or anybody else out there, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and all their organizations will constantly, blow up these false solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the economy's doing no good, then, you know, well, here's the Amero, that's going to help, or, you know, the European Union's going to make the economy better.
Yeah.
When in fact they're just all the stepping stones towards their end goal.
That's right. That's the deal they have laid out for us. And you know, you kind of, I guess, as soon as you try to speak about breaking through, so to speak, to the other side, breaking through all the manipulation and all the propaganda, as it were, you actually pretty quickly in that discussion, in a way, actually end up on the topic of mind control, I guess, that we're gonna kind of dive into today, simply because there are so many levels, of course, to mind control. There's obviously, people think of the hands-on, of course, more direct approach of actually, you know, taking a person or, you know, a mind, or, you know, however you want to put it, and actually, you know, brainwashing that person in a way. But there's so much other mind control going on, you know, day to day in our lives, through the, you know, media, again, through the television, and through all the outlets that they have. I don't know. Do you feel that it's difficult to you know, help people, or even, you know, to some extent yourself, kind of break through the media circus that is out there and constantly, as you say, spreading the fear and manipulating us, and hence that is the mind control that we're battling, right?
Yeah, of course. There's all kinds of levels of it. There's the mind control that even our parents have picked up.
Yeah.
From the trauma that has come down that we've all inherited. And then that gets passed on to the kids. And of course, there's the simple lie and having somebody believe it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the softest form of mind control. And, you know, as you mentioned, then there's the hardest forms of mind control, which is that hands-on programming, traumatizing an individual from their childhood, splitting their mind, creating the compartments, and, you know, adding in the programs in each different dissociative identity, as a lot of people are calling it now, but a different personality.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, you have the subliminals and all that other kind of stuff. Breaking through it, I feel that people, I think it just comes down to something as pure as honesty. You know, to really break it, it just takes the individual to be honest with themselves, and then to honestly look at the world they're living in and start searching.
Yeah.
And then over time, they'll find the clues. If you're honestly searching for answers, if you're honestly searching for an understanding of the world that you live in, and searching for an understanding of yourself, then you're going to find the answers eventually.
Of course. Of course.
There's that whole thing of seek and ye shall find.
Yeah. And nowadays, I mean, it's not that the information isn't out there. I mean, there's almost the opposite. There's almost too much information to wade through in order to get to the root. But I totally agree with what you're saying. If there is genuine interest in trying to understand what's going on, I mean, it's so easy these days to actually, you know, begin to read and through the web and all of this, you know, just there's so much information out there, right?
A lot of us who are into this are, you know, operating under the burden of it all. I mean, it's like a weight.
It is, in a way.
You know, I find myself, I just have to take breaks from it. I just have to say, you know, I'm just going to cool out and,
yeah,
you know, just let my mind clear out, because there's that, you know, there's the taking in of knowledge, and then you can take in so much, your mind can only take so much before it starts, you know, kind of getting fragmented in a way, and not, you know, causing a, you know, it just gets too much sometimes.
Definitely, and you also have to have the, as Bruce Lee said, you also have to have the application of the knowledge that you have learned, so to speak, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that comes down to, you know, I think just how we live our lives. What kind of companies do we support? You know, where do we buy our products from?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, there's some things that we're going to need to live life, but also feel at the same time, if you don't really need it and it's one of their corporations or companies and you're knowledgeable about it, then don't support it. But at the same time, I have no problem of using something that they're providing in essence to use against them.
Hmm. That's interesting, yeah.
That's how it's going to go. But I also feel that with all this knowledge, you know, definitely people need to take breaks and kind of let it settle.
Yeah.
You know, give it a time to process.
Yeah.
That's extremely important.
Definitely.
The Internet has definitely, I think that's one of the downsides of the Internet, that can be too much at one time.
Mm.
You know, there are the pros and cons of the Internet. And that's another reason why I like books, is because books, certainly, there's a spiritual nature to books.
Mm.
And there's a quality when, at least when I'm reading a book, that I connect with the information on a whole other level than I can when I'm reading something off a screen over the computer.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I feel that there's a spiritual quality to books that the Internet or a computer just cannot capture.
Yeah, that's right. There's a totally different experience. You have a different... just sitting in front of the electrical gadget, as it were, is a distraction in a way in itself. But a book, in a way, you have the real physical object right there, and you can, you know, touch it. You can take it with you wherever you want to, and you can read it, you know, whenever you want to. It's there. So definitely, I totally agree.
Yeah, exactly. And I think another thing to mention about computers is never before in known history have we ever had a device that can do so many things at once.
That's right.
You know, it has so many different programs, different things that can be done with it.
Yeah.
And I think that can become overwhelming for anybody.
You
know, if you have a blender, you use the blender and you blend what you're going to blend and you're done with it. You know, but this thing has so much stuff in it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, to get back what we're talking about, the mind control, is that in between all this, the simple lies, the subliminals, and the hardcore forms of mind control through the trauma-based forms of it, you know, we have these new weapon systems that are being developed that are based on these electromagnetic frequencies. And once again, we go back to that whole vibration of life. Everything in life, you know, exists naturally and creates a form of electromagnetic frequency that's naturally there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the military, I know here in America and in Russia, and if you ask me, at the top levels of all the military intelligence, they're all working together. I mean, that's what Kay Griggs brought forward when she started to speak out about the experiences and things that she discovered because of her husband who was involved in this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess, you know, at the top level, there really is no difference, and that's one of the things that in the West, you know, they justify the creation of these weapons. Well, if the Russians are doing it, then we over here have to do it too.
Mm, yeah.
To kind of keep up with them, so... You know, that's, I guess, the story that they give a lot of the people who are lower down in the compartments to keep them motivated to work on these types of things.
Mm, yeah.
But I feel one of the best books that has been written on the subject of electromagnetic frequency weapons is Dr. Nick Begich's Controlling the Human Mind.
Mm-hmm.
He really took all the information and put it together. I want to read here from the first chapter of this book that it's called The Roots of the Technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one subsection called The Energy of Life. Now, this is like a foundation understanding of how these weapon systems work.
Mm.
And he writes, life consists of living cells. Inside each cell is DNA imprinted with the genetic code that controls every aspect of what we are as physical beings. The genetic code controls the development of the cell and production of proteins within the cells. The proteins provide structure to the cell and serve as part of the chemical processes that combine with food, producing the energy and the components needed for cells to continue to self-generate. All the chemical reactions in the cells are driven by electromagnetic oscillations, pulsations, vibrations, or frequencies of the vibrating atoms and substances that make up their composition.
Mm.
This is the frequency code of all atoms, molecules, cells, and components of any living organism. All physical matter is vibrating energetically at some level, with the rate of vibration specific to the material, just like the genetic code is specific to our physical makeup. Goes on to say, all physical matter is composed of systems in motion at their smallest atomic and subatomic levels. Everything in creation is composed of the same basic elements or building blocks. But in their unique combinations, they have the individual fingerprint of a resonant frequency. When a substance's natural vibration rate encounters other energy sources vibrating at the exact same rate, there's a transfer of energy between them that results in a biological reaction. The resonating material is coupled or joined with the energy source, which then directly impacts the targeted material. This will help explain some of the new technologies described in this book operate when energy in certain forms is directed at people. The resonant frequency of a substance is defined at its vibration rate under its normal and natural condition. When a material is activated by interaction with another source of energy at the same resonant frequency, a more powerful and intensive response occurs. If energy is pulse modulated into the substance, a significant change can be created in the codes of the human body, which is why resonance is such an important part of any of these discussions. Another very important discovery in both electronics and physiology were liquid crystals. In electronic circuits, these types of crystals respond to energy so that they go from transparent to opaque or change their character in other ways. In living things, liquid crystals also exist as organic molecules and have characteristics of both solids and liquids. Inside and outside of each cell are liquid crystal organic molecules that will resonate with any outside source of energy where there is a frequency match. They will begin to vibrate at higher states of energy when an outside source is introduced, just like in electronics when a radio station transmitter or home receiver frequencies match. Another example is when a singer hits a certain musical note. A substance, in this case a crystal glass, begins to vibrate in harmony and sympathetically with the resonant frequency of the singer's voice. At such a high enough level of energy that it causes the glass to break into pieces. The energy charge on the inside and outside of the cells can also be manipulated in various forms to change the liquid crystals, sort of like living microcircuits. He goes on to say, all processes that build up and break down the cells and chemicals of the body are controlled by electromagnetic oscillations. The metabolic processes are processes that can be influenced through applied external energy sources of low power when they share the same frequency codes. When the laws of physics are applied to materials that make up the human body, a much different set of possibilities begins to emerge. Manipulation of the frequency code of living things can change them in more direct and powerful ways than chemicals because the delivery systems are precise and only affect the targeted materials, elements, molecules, cells, organs, and etc. Electromagnetic fields can be introduced from devices outside of the human body with any specific living organism or individual substance in the human body being targeted. The electromagnetic spectrum has within it ultra-low frequencies below a fraction of a pulsation per second up to significantly higher and higher frequencies, including radio waves, light, microwaves, X-rays, cosmic rays, and so on. Any of these can be manipulated with significant effect to living creatures. The 5 level. These natural signals are random and generally not coherent or rhythmic in the same way as other biologically active signals. This is not to suggest that other Earth-driven cycles or energy exchanges do not affect life, as of course they do. What we are talking about here are specific energy sources of sufficient power and signaling capabilities to affect the resonant frequency of any substance. Mm. What happens when an external electromagnetic field is in resonance with a biological molecule, then the same type of molecule will experience an energy exchange through induced electron flow with electromagnetic coupling. Researchers like Dr. Rolf Addy and others have shown that the cells of the body are like filters or tuners that only recognize a corresponding electromagnetic signal that matches their own. Electromagnetic coupling allows the creation of very specific, controlled effects over any aspect of a living creature. Once decoded, the understanding of the frequency codes of the body, brain, and mind can be applied to people. In healing viral and bacterial intrusions, regulating chemical and metabolic processes in the body, introducing information transfers into the brain that alter perceptions, and more.
Yeah.
So that gives you a basic understanding that, you know, there's this whole new science that's coming around and getting this understanding of the electromagnetic frequencies that operate in life.
Yeah.
And these have become the new targets, if you will, or the new types of a delivery system.
Yeah, exactly.
That are being used to actually affect human beings, and they're being applied, you know, for military applications. The same thing that these weapons are based on can actually be applied for medical purposes as well.
Mm.
I mean, so there's that two sides of the coin. They could actually heal bones with these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
Get the frequency of a certain virus and send that frequency towards that specific virus and actually eliminate it. The actual death frequency of it.
Yeah.
But with the creation of these weapons, that the new target is now the human mind.
Mm.
And the body on the organic level of certain organs. Of heart, stomach, anything.
Mm, yeah.
You know, even down to the cellular level, I believe.
Yeah.
With some of my experiences of what I've been through, been through with these types of weapons.
Yeah.
Having these things used on me.
Let's go into that a little bit, because that's fascinating. I guess. You know, when speaking of these, you know, that the electromagnetic frequencies can be, you know, applied in such a way, I guess one of the first questions that comes to mind is, okay, so how is this actually done? Is it like through a device that is pointed at you? Is there a distance involved here? There's, you know, many questions that arise from this. And just as you say there, you have actually had experience by these EMF, you know, I don't know if we should, well, we should call them weaponry then, I guess, but let's go into that and tell us more about it. What happened and what was the, you know, device and how was it used on you? Were it used on a group of people? What happened?
Yeah, well, it was specifically targeted at me. This all started for me in 1994, and I was 19 at the time. And it's, you know, it's a very different thing when, I mean, looking back on it now, it's another thing. But at the time, you know, I had no idea what was going on. All of a sudden, when it started, I remember feeling this strange type of vibration around me. And I was getting certain voices beamed at me, because this is one of the aspects of these technologies, is that they can take a voice and they can either beam it somewhere around you, or they can actually beam it into your head.
Hmm.
And a lot of things that they were doing with me was playing this type of psychological game. And of course, when people, you know, hear this kind of stuff, they would think, well, you just got a mental disease and all these other things.
Hmm.
But the first time it happened for me, it was, they hit me extremely hard with these things. And the first, kind of hit that I got was an intuitive thing. So I've always been kind of in touch with myself since I was a little kid, always thinking about things and following my intuition and heart and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm getting hit with all these voices, and it would keep me up for 3 days on end, sometimes longer, allow me to sleep for a couple hours, and keep me up for another 3-4 days, and all these types of things are possible with these weapons. And my intuition started to scream at me that the government was doing this to me.
Mm.
And I couldn't explain how it was happening or anything of that nature. But that was the intuition that was happening. At the time, I was living with my parents, so I told them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a strange character that moved in next door, not too long before this started.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard for me to talk about it because everything's kind of disjunct in my mind as far as the memories are concerned. So
mm-hmm.
I definitely apologize for not sounding as if it's flowing properly.
No problem. No problem at all. So it started, but so this was, if we are to say like this, was this something that was going on almost constantly, like every day, or was it like short periods for a day or for a week or for a month? What was the time span here, so to speak?
Yeah, it would happen until they would get me into a mental hospital. So the time frame would be maybe a month and a half.
Mm.
Sometimes I lasted, in the beginning, I lasted for a couple months. This was going on. Then my parents, they didn't know what was going on until they start talking to people, and then they're saying, oh, well, maybe he's schizophrenic or he's bipolar. My intuition was always telling me that wasn't the case, that there was something more going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would put me in into a mental institute. And when that happens, it's called 302. You get 302 to a mental institute. You're pretty much a prisoner in this place. You can't get out. You're forced to take their pills. They really don't want to hear in that place what your understanding or perceptions are, what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
They just want to give you pills and then keep you quiet. And when you look into the background of psychology and psychiatry, you find it's just another avenue that's plugged into the mental health system, which again is controlled ultimately by these New World Order cabal.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form, that they have their hands in all this stuff.
Mm.
So I would come out of the hospital, and the first time I came out of the hospital, my mind was it was pretty much blank. I was like a zombie. They put me on this medication called Halidol Cogentin, and it makes your brain swell.
Okay.
And then your brain kind of rubs up against the top of your skull.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I came out, and I'm not sure if it was something that had to do with the weapons or had to do with the medication or the trauma of the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came out, I was in this zombified state. I couldn't remember anything about myself.
Oof. Okay.
So I would come out and I wouldn't take the pills. I didn't want them because I had this sense that something else was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling them one story before about and some of these other, you know, people that when you do the research into what was going on with them, there's definitely a lot more happening than just what the cover story is. You're looking at some type of mind control operation that was working on these guys to set them up as patsies or to run them to go and, you know, commit a murder in the case of John Lennon for whatever purpose that these people have.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was strange that he comes out and says that to me. You know, later down the road when I start educating myself about these things, it starts making sense. And then later, I remember talking to him at one point, he tells me that his father actually worked on the Manhattan Project.
There we go.
You know, and that's pretty interesting. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying one way or the other. I suspect this guy was involved in what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I have no proof of it. Because with these type of weapon systems, you're dealing with the perfect crime. I mean, as far as the delivery systems are concerned with this, it can be done from satellites.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done with type of devices hooked up on planes flying over.
Sure.
It can be done with handheld type of devices. The HARP antenna is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Gwen Towers, which they say the Gwen Towers are set up to be there for, to have a communication system after there's some type of nuclear strike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you look at how the Gwen Towers are constructed, they're not built for that.
Mm.
They wouldn't be able to survive a nuclear strike. They have the circuitry in them that would fry up.
Mm.
From, you know, when a nuclear bomb's dropped at first, there's this electromagnetic blast.
Mm, yeah.
That precedes it, and that knocks all the electronics out before even the radiation and the fire and all that other stuff comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have these things set up. I think they're like, I'm not sure, but they're set up all across America. I think they're like 200 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be another delivery system. And I suspect that the whole cell phone industry itself is a front. And that these antennas, these cell phone antennas and things like that, are, there's something more going on with them.
Yeah, just look at the way, if you think about it, just look at the way how cell phones have been, in a way, delivered into society. I mean, everybody, you know, almost everybody, as far as I know, that actually can afford one in that sense, actually do have one. And the way that these have been, you know, slashed in prices in order for everyone to actually get a hold of one, and how it has been, you know, hyped in that sense. There's definitely something very interesting going on if you actually sit down and think about the way these things in such a short time has been implemented, you know, into our society.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're looking at a virtual spy in your pocket when dealing with these phones. And some of the original research that was done on this, I'm not sure the man who did it, but he went and wrote a book about it. I'm not sure what the title is either. I mean, they gave this guy, I think, $1 million to do the research, and it was Motorola at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back and he says, no, these things aren't safe for humans to use.
Yeah.
And yet they just, you know, went, of course, bought some other site.
Yeah, exactly. They paid.
It would take money and say, yeah, they're safe.
Sure. Paid for a new study, of course.
Right.
So, I mean, okay, yes, we have... I mean, so many aspects here. I mean, I'm having an article up right now here that is called DARPA's sonic projector, and it says basically that the Air Force has experimented with microwaves that create sounds in people's heads, and this is like from Wired.com. So this is, you know, this is
right.
Something that is kind of coming into the mainstream, as it were, now. Also, it's you know, they're talking about the beam sounds, and they have projected or directed acoustic systems, even being implemented in some you know, museums and exhibition halls, that you actually, when you go into a certain field, very narrow, only you can hear it, you know, directed sounds. I mean, this is, again, this is not that is, you know, way out there or far ahead. If people think that, this is something that is, you know, has been played with for a long, long time now. So I mean, it is out there. But would you say, or would you suspect that you actually were being set up to be what, a drone and an assassin? What do you think were going on here, and why you? Do you have any clues on that?
Well, I mean, I can't answer why they did it to me. I mean, I have my my ideas on it about, you know, what, you know, maybe alerted them to me or things of that nature.
Mm.
I don't know what they were trying to do, but whatever it was, it didn't work, because I'm here talking about it,
yeah.
And I'm pretty much in control of my life. I still get hit with things once in a while, but not nothing like what it used to be.
Okay.
What it used to be like.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel that what's going on is that, I mean, I'm not the only one who's been hit with this stuff.
No.
Contact with a handful of other victims, and I'm sure there's thousands of them out there.
Mm.
But what I think that they're doing is that they're actually field testing these things. You know, when you're going to test something, you're not going to get your best results in the laboratory.
Mm. Yeah.
You got to go out and do it in a live type of situation.
Yeah.
So there you can do your best, you know, testing on these types of weapons, then you can go back and take your data or whatever and reformulate and say, well, this isn't working and all this other stuff. I myself kind of found a way to defeat them over time. Each time that they would hit me, they hit me a total of six times. Once in 1994, I would go into the hospital, I would come out of the hospital, I'd be wrecked from the whole experience, the pills and everything else. I would build myself back up, start getting my life back together, and here I am. They're telling me I'm a schizophrenic, a bipolar, you know, you're not going to be able to live your life normally without these pills. And every time I stopped taking the pills, I started to, you know, okay, let's get back to where I was.
Mm, yeah.
Start working towards something, and then once where I started to get to a certain level with myself, get it back on my feet and moving again, they would zap me again.
Yeah.
And this happened six times.
Okay.
Each time, I got better at handling it. You know, because at first, when you walk into any type of new experience or using something, or, you know, just to use this analogy, you're not familiar with it.
Mm.
But the more this stuff started to happen to me, the more familiar I got with it. And
so you
at first, you know, I was thinking that, okay, these are evil spirits, they're demons, and you know, play with my mind, things like that.
But by the way, just a quick question here. Do you remember, like, was this, you said you did mention voices. Was this in English? What did they say? Do you remember anything of that?
Yeah, they were in English. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would say horrible things. When I go back to remembering this stuff and what their voices were saying, it was a very tailored psychological game they were playing on me. I mean, they would say obtrusive stuff to me, real sick stuff, to kind of degrade people who I you know, admired and things like that. Because, like I said, I came from this whole Rastafarian thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point I considered myself a Rastafarian. I don't really anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole teaching kind of gave me a good ground to stand on. So they would, you know, say things like that. And one example would be, okay, they had me locked up in this mental hospital called Building 50 on the grounds of the Norristown State Hospital in my area.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I'm not sure. It's not really affiliated with that hospital, but it's on their grounds. And one thing that I noticed that went along when this was happening to me is this hum.
Hmm.
I would hear this hum. And I suspect that the hum that I hear and heard, I still hear it now, is the carrier wave. Because, you know, you have the carrier wave and then you send out the signals upon that wave. So I'm in the hospital one night, and this thick, loud hum comes over the hospital. And down the hall, they had this TV room where, you know, they would let everybody go in there and smoke their cigarettes. Now, this is late at night. Everybody else in the hospital seems to be asleep. I'm still up. And then out of the TV room, I hear this, and I don't know if it's coming from a TV, or I don't know if they were just, you know, broadcasting this so only I could hear it. But it sounded to me like Nazi-style, you know, war transmissions. Like they sounded like Nazis.
Okay.
But they were speaking in English. So I'm sitting down the hall in the room hearing all this. This thick hum on me, so I get up and say, I'm going to go investigate this. So I walk down the hall. And as I'm walking down the hall, there's those transmissions that I was hearing of this Nazi-style, you know, content switches over to this techno song. And the lyrics in it kept on repeating, fuck Rastafari, over and over.
Sheesh. Right.
I mean, it just was like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah,
here?
Of course.
Yeah. Really, you know, put me in a state of fear. So, you know, what I did is I walked down to the nurse's station, and in this place, there's only supposed to be a nurse on hand. I walked down there, there's all windows throughout it, there's nobody in there. Behind the nurse's station is this room, and there was a door that led out to the hallway. So I knock on that door. And in that room, I hear a bunch of these people start laughing. And I mean, they were laughing this very evil type of laugh. You know, right when that happened. So I'm just thinking, I'm in the pit of hell here.
Sheesh, yeah.
So I go back to the room, and at the time, you know, I have my Bible with me. You know, I don't particularly, I've learned a lot about religion since then. And, you know, in my eyes at this point, religion is just another screen of control. I think religion was set up to create this screen between actual the people and getting in touch with real spirituality. But at the time, you know, I was into those things, so I went to go get a spiritual sort of strength from go read some Psalms. And so when I opened the Bible, I look at the words, and all the words right before my eyes changed. And this goes into what some of the things are able to do with these weapons as far as affecting your visual cortex and having you see illusions.
Yeah.
And from my experience, they're certainly able, I think, well, I don't say I think, I'll say I know, and there's definitely, it's in the literature, the military documents, if you do the reading. And like you were saying about that one news article out of Wired, I mean, the stuff that they're letting us know about in the mainstream media and in news publications, that's just, you know, it's just the peanuts.
Yeah, exactly.
Of what these weapon systems can actually do.
Yeah.
So from my experience, they definitely can see what I'm seeing, hear what I'm thinking. I don't know really how they're doing it, but they're certainly doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's one time I was looking at a picture on the back of an album, and it was a Capleton album. It was a, you know, reggae musician. And right before my eyes, he changed over. It changed into this Middle Eastern type of looking general. But the thing that really gets me, and I think is the most telling thing that proves that this isn't just some rantings of someone trying to say, oh, well, you know, he's just trying to find a way that he's not got a message. happy to admit to. You know, but when this would happen, my mother would call the, she would 302 me, like I said. They would come and get me at the ambulance, and they would bring the cops. Now, this one time they came to get me, but I never wanted to go into this place. It was like a prison. So I'm out front, and I'm trapped. And the cops are there. There's about four or five, six cops there. Maybe more than any ambulance, and then, you know, these strange guys who drive me in. And I'm standing there, and I'm not moving or anything. And any time a cop would pull somebody over, I'm not sure what it's like in Sweden for you, but usually the radio is pretty quiet. You might hear something, you know, blah, 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 this is happening, 10-4, whatever codes are they have.
Sure.
And then the radio would shut off, and, you know, you wouldn't hear anything. This time when they came to pick me up, there was nothing but the static and a lot of different noise on the radios. And while I'm standing there, I'm feeling trapped, I get this sudden instinct to run. And yet I don't move. Over the radio, the dispatcher voice comes through, and she says, he's thinking of running.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
and right
geez.
At that moment, a couple of the cops kind of lunged forward. And so here I am seeing this, and I'm like, aha.
That's like a, what do you call it, a Truman Show moment there, almost?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that movie right there is, you know, the symbolism of it. That's what it's exactly like, is living in a real-life type of Truman Show.
Yeah. Everybody's watching you. They know even what you're thinking. But that's very interesting. We could go, I guess, on and on. You know, about this, if this actually was something that only was internal, meaning that it was something that was directed, you know, towards you and happening inside your mental, you know, in your mind, as it were, or this was something that was happening on the radio and they actually in some way were able to read your thoughts or, you know, pick up on what you were thinking about doing, right?
Right. Definitely the evidence that they, you know, can pick up and read thoughts. You hear about some of these brain scanners that they're thinking of putting into the, you know, in the airports and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to scan your brain and find out if you're a terrorist.
Yeah. And they even have, let's see, I'm trying to pull up that article now, but I remember it. They were implementing some new toy, I think, released from Japan, I think. A toy that could pick up on your brain waves and respond to, you know, your patterns of what you were thinking at the moment. And this toy would have different effects depending on what your mood or whatever was. So again, this is something that is being deployed now on the you know, toys department of you know, implementation of technology. So just imagine what they actually do have way up there, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a quote out of Dr. Begich's Controlling the Human Mind again, and he's talking about this one section called What's on Your Mind, and he's talking about patents, and he writes here, in 1975. Developments in ways to measure the extremely weak magnetic fields emanating from organs such as the heart, brain, and lungs are leading to important new methods for diagnosing abnormal conditions. This knowledge is used to interpret and apply the frequency codes using magnetic fields as a way to facilitate induction. They can affect specific targeted body organs. It goes on, in 1995, a system for capturing and decoding brain signals was developed, which includes a transducer for stimulating a person's brain. EEG transducers for recording brainwave signals from the person. A computer for controlling and synchronizing stimuli presented to the person. At the same time, the system would record brainwave signals and either interpret signals using a model for conceptual, perceptual, and emotional thought to correspond to the EEG signals of thought of the person, or compare the signals to normal brain signals from a normal population to diagnose and locate the origin of brain dysfunction, underlying perception, conception, and emotion. It goes on to write here, in other words, the device reads one's mind by comparing your brain activity to other people's, and then by using this information, they can create new signals and send them back to change the perception or emotion.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is the cutting edge stuff. This is just like, this is the whole new weapon systems. It's no different. It's creating the type of changes in the world. It can drastically change the world, of course, where they can psycho-civilize societies, but it's very similar to what we see with the creation of the atomic bomb and the Manhattan Project. It's just that next jump up.
Yeah, exactly. And there's new, I mean, this, in a sense, has always, you know, been the case, I guess, but on different levels. I mean, it's not a war. Well, it is a war actually, but it's not, you know, it's a struggle against, well, it's like, you know, bacteria and antibodies or whatever. This is something that is constantly evolving, and as new technologies being implemented, we have to implement new ways of actually dealing with that as a problem. But I guess we're standing on a kind of a different edge this time. We're standing on a different level, because this is going into aspects that I don't know, we might not think of these kinds of things on an everyday basis, as it were, you know, voices in the head, where, I mean, for a long time people have been, you know, staying away from all the, you know, psychological, mental aspects, almost, it feels like, and this is certainly things that goes hand in hand and into that area. So instead of looking at these problems, where, as you say, we just take people and lock them up on mental hospital, or, you know, to get away with this problem. But this is very serious, actually.
Yeah, it certainly is very serious, and there's so many people out there that are victims of this kind of stuff, and they know they're victims of it, and they're having a hard time dealing with it. But I wonder how many people out there are getting hit with this stuff, and they're buying what the doctor's telling them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I remember one night years ago going out and getting a pack of cigarettes at a local gas station, and I remember this, you know, it went down into one of the lesser fortunate neighborhoods to get it, because they had a kind of cigarettes I like to smoke there. And, you know, here's this kid talking to this girl over here, and he says, you know, you don't want to be with me or hang out with me because I hear voices and stuff like that, right? You just think I'm crazy. Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, I bet you this kid's getting hit with this stuff.
Yeah. They could. I guess they even could, as you say, that if they spread this over an entire area, it might not be, you know, something that is picked up by everyone. But a lot of people in that area actually are, for some reason, either if it's, genetic or physiological, or if it's even psychological, then they're actually are picking up on this, and are hearing these voices, and it might even be a different experience for everyone, as long as they trigger some kind of mental thing that is inside your own head, meaning that they just deliver the signal, but the voices or the outcome of it, what you actually hear, may be even different from person to person. Could that be the case, do you think?
Oh yes. They definitely, what they do is, when we got to come back to the whole bioresonant frequency, the bioelectromagnetics. Just like you have a fingerprint, everyone has a unique fingerprint. We all have a unique bioelectric print, if you will. And they can hone in on that specifically, and you can be in a group of people, and they can hone in on one person's frequency and actually target them. They could drive that one person crazy and do anything and everything that they wanted to, and nobody else around them would understand it. If they had no concept or awareness of this type of knowledge and that these weapon systems existed.
Yeah.
Or they could actually spray this whole type of frequency beam over a whole area. In fact, I suspect that what happened in Los Angeles, just what was that, 1991, 92, when the LA riots happened?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, I suspect they zapped that whole town. It just doesn't make sense to me that the whole city just went up in flames. You know, in just a split second like that. Everybody flips out at once.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, that might be, definitely. I mean, to make people get to that level of aggression or whatever, just unconsciously go out and thrash. But, yeah, that's very interesting. But, you know, one thing I guess round up this segment on a note that is, I guess that this hasn't completely stopped then for you, but would you say that this have eased down or subsided, as it were? And if that is the case, was it something specific that you did, do you think? Or was it that you were able to maintain your own personality throughout this time so that they eventually gave up on you? What do you think is going on here?
I think in some ways, I probably beat them. But in other ways, sometimes I feel like I'm not quite sure of it. You know, maybe there's something else going on here that I'm not aware of, that instead of turning the volume up real loud on me, they actually have it on a lower level.
Hmm.
You know, I'm not sure, but what happened for me is when they were hitting me one time, I ended up picking up the Carlos Castaneda book called The Power of Silence. And, he talks a lot about the energy body and things of that nature. And when I started reading that book, it kind of put me in this place. And it made complete sense to me because of the type of mind I was in. I would get in a state of mind when this kind of stuff was going on. And, you know, from reading his work, you know, there's this one other thing that he talks about. He says around us is this energy body. And on our energy body is something called a focal point. And the whole nature of a shaman, as far as that whole Toltec tradition that Don Juan was teaching Carlos Castaneda, I guess some people say it could just be some kind of hoax or something, those books, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of made sense to me in regards to what I was going through.
Sure, yeah.
That the whole nature of a shaman is to be able to get control of that focal point on the energy body, and if you can slightly move it, you can actually change your perceptions. And they were discussing in the one book, The Fire Within, how some people get in accidents and it will knock that focal point out of place. And Don Juan was saying, well, they'll just think they're crazy and eventually it will slap back into place and life will go on the normal for them and whatever. But I started to consider, you know, that's probably part of what maybe is happening when they do this stuff, and maybe they're not even aware of it, that they're kind of pushing the focal point. So that's how I started to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then eventually, as I started to kind of learn to sit with it and deal with it, I wasn't letting it get into me as much, you know, because a lot of it was using fear against me. They would say, oh, you know, we're gonna kill your friend. Someone's coming to kill your friend. So I'd get on my bike and I'd ride down to my friend's house and I'd sit on his porch. And I'd be suspect of anybody and everybody coming by.
Mm.
So they used a lot of that kind of stuff on me.
Mm-hmm.
What I eventually, you know, began to realize is that the only thing that they could affect me through was my ego. Mm-hmm. That was the sort of doorway and for them to control. You know, below the, I kind of see the ego as more of a, not from a psychological perspective, but more from a spiritual perspective, if you're aware of the type of things that Eckhart Tolle talks about.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you know, if you don't give them anything to go on, they have nothing to work with.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And another thing that I started to do was a friend of mine gave me this book on crystals. And I read this book on crystals that he gave me called Rocks of Ages. And the crystal, when you hold it in your hands or get it warm around your body, it can create, it can balance certain natural energies in your body depending on the properties of the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started to carry a double terminated quartz, which gives you the kind of higher frequencies and sets up a kind of energy shield in conjunction with another type of crystal called galena, which is a lead crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And that sets up a kind of ground you and puts up like a strong barrier against radiation and type of things like that. And that's what a lot of these weapons work on. They call it non-ionizing radiation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I started to carry these crystals with me, how it would go is when they would first try and zap me, they would hit me in such a way to kind of knock me off balance in a mental way and then get me rolling in a certain direction. But with the crystals, there was a couple times they tried to zap me and get me knocked off balance, and it didn't work. I was able to maintain myself.
Mm.
It's not like I wasn't experiencing this. I was still experiencing, but I was able to rest and stay in the inner presence of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of getting caught in my ego, because if I get trapped in my ego, well, then they can just roll me along. So that's kind of how I started to, defeat this type of thing and remove the hooks, so to speak, that they had in my ego. I'm not saying I'm egoless.
Sure.
It's still there. It still functions in me in ways, but learning a lot from Eckhart Tolle and doing that spiritual meditation and things like that has helped a lot.
Yeah.
And reading another book, A Course in Miracles, they have a lot of great concepts in there, even though it's covered over in Christian terminology.
Sure.
The concepts are still there.
Sure.
And so that helped me a lot too.
So in a way, I guess a combination of recognizing the spirit, or that you're a spiritual being, and then being aware of that these things are possible, that technology and so forth, and then being able to, you know, balance yourself, finding your center, and even if you have to take help, as it were, from some kind of, you know, crystal or other balancing device, these are tools that actually then can help you to not being as much affected by these things that, as you know, potentially you're going to be then, I guess.
Yeah, of course. But it all has to deal with reaction and stuff like that. They can do whatever they're going to do, and if you react to it, they can drag you along.
Yeah.
If you don't react to it and you sit with it and just observe it, they don't really have anything to go on. There were some of the, some of the experiences, and when so the crystals came into my life, that's when I started to really wake up and get my mind wrapped around a lot of what was going on in the world. And this was in 2003.
Yeah.
I went to this natural healer, and I told her all the stuff that I was going through. You know, she would do shiatsu and things like that. And she told me about the heart antenna. So I went out to go get the harp, this book on harp. I found the one that was written by Jerry Smith.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't really know a lot of these books were out there, and in the same section had one of David Icke's books, the House in Wonderland book, and I seen it.
Yeah.
took note of it, and right at that time, I was zapped real hard while I was in the bookstore. And you know how David Icke has the Bridge of Love?
Yeah.
Of his publishing company. They started to try and scare me and make me feel like they were saying, you broke the Bridge of Love, and there's this thick hum over the whole place. Really strange experience. But I had my crystals with me, and, you know, I took note of it, and picked up my book, went home, and read it, and later I got the David Icke book, because when I seen it, I was like, aha, someone finally wrote something about 9/11.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have a computer. I didn't get a computer until, I think, 2004. But, you know, when 9/11 happened for me, it was like, okay, something's going on here. Mm. They're not telling us.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, what's really happening.
Listen.
Go ahead.
No, and I'm just going to mention that this is probably a good place maybe to round things up for the first segment here. But, you know, before we do that and so forth, I want to give you an opportunity to, because you have a lot of these books that we have been talking about so far here on your website or bookstore, oneheartbooks.com. But tell us, you know, some of the titles, and I guess it's, you know, very easy to go on there and get some of these titles from you. You have it divided up in different topics in case people want to check out on different subjects than mind control, of course. But mention a few of these books and how people can order and so forth.
Yeah, anybody can go browse the website at oneheartbooks.com. You can either, you know, buy it with a credit card online. I use the PayPal shopping card. You know, it's a pretty simple process. If anybody has any questions when doing so on the process, you can always email me and I can help you out. Or you can send a check or money order. I have a mail order page as well. Yeah, there's so many good books out there. It's not a, you know, it's just so many good books. It's overwhelming. The one Nick Begich book, Controlling the Human Mind, is great as far as mind control goes.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Keefe's book, Mind Control, World Control, is a great book. He really gives you a good understanding of the background of you know, the Rockefellers and how they funded education, and I guess it's One Thing in Psychology, Wilhelm Maximilian Wundt.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about him and how that was the beginning of taking psychology into another direction, away from the Jungian type or the Jungian type of ideas, where you're looking in more into the soul and the mind and the subconscious, and looking at you know, symbology of things,
yeah,
and like that. And he gets into talking about the mind control weapons and implantable devices and all that. That's a really good book. You know, we have the New World Order section, the agenda, New World Order agenda, that deals a lot with just different things pertaining to the agenda, things that they have done in the past, where they're taking things. There's a whole section on secret societies, you know, Bloodlines of the Illuminati, Albert Pike's Morals, Morals and Dogma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have any of it in front of me. It's kind of hard to remember. And then there's you know, the mind control section. I have a miscellaneous title section.
Mm-hmm.
Section on Atlantis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I feel is extremely important, because there's certainly more to the history of the human race on this planet than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm.
The subject of Atlantis and Lemuria really starts to reveal some of these ancient clues.
That's right. That's right.
In regards to our origins as a people on this earth,
and yeah,
to some of the things that have happened to us and is now being covered up.
That's right.
In these times, and then the whole aliens, the alien connection, and UFOs, which, you know, there's some good books in there. It's not my, you know, it's one of the subjects I'm not well versed in. But, you know, from what studying that I have done, if you ask me, at the top of all of this, there is some some type of alien race involved in this. I mean, when you look at some of the things that the Dogon and Mali had to say, when they talk about the what they called the Nomo, the half-fish, half-human being creature that came down and gave them all this information.
Yeah.
And then we find Dagon and Marduk and this fish god being worshipped in Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole symbology with the Pope's mitre.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a coincidence.
No.
Going on there.
That's right. Definitely.
You know. And if it was the Dogon, I think the story is told that, you know, they wouldn't worship these things. They called them an abomination.
Mm.
And yet we find them being worshipped in Babylon. So they're like, okay, we're not going to deal with you because you're not going to worship us. We'll go find somebody.
That's right. Again, there's a lot of different sections up there. People do check it out, oneheartbooks.com. Check out the mind control section we've been talking about here today. But again, for this segment, I want to thank you so much, AJ Bruno, for coming on.
Yeah, man, you're welcome, my brother, and I want to thank you for having me on.
Thank you. We will continue with part two of this program on mind control with AJ Bruno this coming Sunday. And we have our regular guest, Michael Tesserion, scheduled for next upcoming Thursday. Thanks for all the nice emails we receive with the encouragement and all the positive feedback in the forum. We will talk more on Sunday. Until then, this is Henrik Palmgren. Take care.